This is Our Voices. I'm Mario Trimble. In order to be a place where everyone in our community feels valued and connected, we first have to ensure everyone believes they belong. These are Our Voices, a joint podcast production from the Colorado and Denver Bar Association's Equity, Diversity, and Inclusivity Joint Steering Committee. Our Voices shines a light on the unique stories, experiences, and backgrounds of our member leaders so that we can help each other walk together. Don't let their disarming wit and laid-back charm fool you. Brothers Danny and David Foster are fierce leaders and a force in the Denver legal community. As co-managing partners of law firm Foster, Graham, Milstein, and Kalischer, the Fosters have built their practice on the philosophy of genuine camaraderie and respect, so much so that the firm has been selected for the past 2 years in a row as one of the Denver Post's top workplaces in Denver, the only law firm to earn that distinction. The sons of a former Colorado State Senator and the senior rabbi of the largest and oldest synagogue in the Rocky Mountain region, the Fosters credit the values their parents instilled in them for their shared sense of community, justice, and compassion. The brothers sat down with our own Linda Moss and Mallory Revel to talk about their upbringing, their shared vision for Foster, Graham, Milstein, and Kalischer, and advice for others thinking of growing their own legal practice.
Welcome to Our Voices. I'm Mallory Revel, a criminal defense attorney with Foster, Graham, Milstein, and Kalischer, and I'm here with my co-host, Linda Moss, with Coombe, Curry, Rich, and Jarvis. Today, we are with David and Danny Foster, also known as My Bosses. So we want to talk to you guys today about a number of things, but let's jump right in and learn about your backgrounds. Who were you growing up?
I was a superhero. I was a real-life superhero, Mallory, growing up, and that's what I really focused on. And I was planning on following through with that, but it did fall through.
So, did you have a cape?
I did have a cape. I had capes and masks, all kinds of stuff, but it wasn't very lucrative. And I think my parents were starting to get a little bit concerned in like 11th grade.
Yeah. So, time to get a job.
Decided to pursue law.
Okay. Let's talk about, you mentioned your parents. Tell us a little bit about your parents and what they did.
David, why don't you take it since they like you more anyway?
Well, so we're not going to address Danny's superhero.
If you would like to rebut that, please.
No. I was just going to pile on to that, but I guess we'll leave that be for now. Mm-hmm. Danny and I have a sister, Debbie.
Got to make sure we mention her.
This is the first time we've referenced her this early in a conversation like we're having. So our parents are Stephen and Joyce Foster, and we've been in Denver since 1970. It was the first job that my dad took out of rabbinical school, and has been here for the last 50 years. Since 1970, so 52 years, I guess.
50 and a half years.
50 and a half years.
Right. July 1970, of 1970. 2020. I was 17 days old.
Yes. Oh, little baby Danny.
I was so cute.
Baby superhero.
Superhero Danny. Mm-hmm.
And so he likes to say that he took his first and only job as a rabbi at Temple Emmanuel. And he retired 10 years ago, having served the congregation for 40 years, which is biblical. You have to do everything in Judaism biblically. So 40 years. And my mom, over the course of the last 50 years, has done lots of things, including raising us. And she was a stay-at-home mom for a number of years and then went on to work for Jewish Family and Children's Services, and she did employment counseling and employment placement when a number of the Jews from the former Soviet Union were making their way to America. And so she placed many of them around town in jobs that weren't quite what they had left in the former Soviet Union. And then from there, she ran for Denver City Council and was on Denver City Council, was the president of Denver City Council, and then served in the Colorado State Senate.
The first Jewish woman Denver City Council person.
Wow.
Yes. What was it like growing up with a rabbi and a senator?
Well, growing up with the rabbi first, because the senator didn't come till late. Even the city council person wasn't until I had already graduated college. So, but you always had front row seats to Yom Kippur services.
And backstage pass.
And backstage Ooh. Passes. And it was interesting how few people coveted those. So I was in possession of a commodity that didn't have much value. But the thing about our father and our synagogue is, because Temple Emmanuel is the largest congregation between St. Louis and L.A., you know, it is a substantial congregation. It still is today. And so people knew my dad. They knew my mom. Even, you know, people that even today, I don't know who these people are, right? And I'm the president of Temple Emmanuel. So, but there was you know, everyone knew who you were. And that was always something that we grew up with is, oh, you're Stephen Joyce's son, you're Rabbi's son. I'm like, yeah, so that's, you know, so you have that certain sense of identity. Your first identity is really being the son of the rabbi of Temple Emmanuel. So, you know, It was just normal for us, I suppose, like anybody else who grows up with a parent who's a semi-public figure. And it helped form the core of, I think, who David and Debbie and I are, you know, because it's a very progressive synagogue and progressive values. And, you know, it's not just from a religious perspective, but from a secular perspective as well. So it was always nice. I look back fondly, Mallory, on my childhood.
That's lovely to hear.
Isn't that nice?
What values did your parents instill in you, in especially public service? It sounds like they're both prominent public servants. What kind of values did they instill in you?
Well, without sounding cliche or trite, I think it's kind of, you know, you want to do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. That's big in, you know.
Isn't that the New Testament?
That's technically, I believe that came from Rabbi Hillel, who is a mid-century, you know, 15th or 16th century rabbi. When was he?
I don't know. I'm not going there. I'm a lawyer. I'm not a rabbi.
But he basically had the phrase that, someone went to him, you know, who's a philosopher rabbi back in the day, and they go, tell me all, if you're so smart, if you know everything, tell me everything there is to know about the Torah, about the Bible, while standing on one foot. And he said, I can. And he says, do unto others as you do, as you'd have them do unto you. The rest is commentary. Okay. That seems
makes sense.
Fairly.
It was a short podcast.
Right. He didn't play it out. Anyway, that's sort of the thing. It's, I think that, you know, you're trying to look out for your community, look out for people who are disenfranchised, looking out for, you know, those who have had who haven't had the benefits and the luxuries that we've had growing up. So whether it's, I mean, it I guess it spans all types of, you know, marginalized populations, and even before it was the popular thing to do. And David will explain more about this, because this is really kind of his territory. But, you know, my father grew up in the civil rights era and was very active in the civil rights era. So he kind of brought that with him. And his whole generation of rabbis who were going through rabbinical school in the mid-60s, late-60s, you know, that was, you know, it became part of their DNA. So,
yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, as Jews, we recognize that we've been in the minority in, you know, in this country, certainly throughout, you know, millennia, and, you know, recognizing what that means, to be, you know, a minority in a community, and having an appreciation for that. I mean, I think for me and Danny, you know, one of my early memories, I wouldn't say it was one of my first memories, but one of my early memories was on our way to synagogue, which is up in Hilltop neighborhood. And we drove by another, we drove by a smaller synagogue on the way to ours, and there was this protest that was building outside because Pat Schroeder was speaking. She was our congresswoman at that time, and it was being picketed by a local KKK group. They were popular back then, as it turns out, as they are today. And my dad, I remember, he pulled off to the side of the road and wanted to make sure that the community, you know, both the Jewish community felt comfortable and that the instigators, you know, were kind of keeping their distance and keeping peace. And, you know, and that was something that was happening in our own community. So kind of recognizing that, you know, I know that we're going to talk about, you know, inclusivity and, you know, what has been done maybe in our own law firm or in the community. But way back when, you know, Jews have had this place as minorities in our community. You know, nobody thinks of Jews as minorities in the legal community. and you know, I mean, we laugh about that a little bit, but, you know, I think there's something that is very powerful about that. I think there's something that is significant about the fact that in our community, we see a number of very high-profile members of the Jewish community in lots of different roles, from Supreme Court, you know, justices, Court of Appeals judges, you know, some significant lawyers practicing. And so, you know, I think to the point that you had asked initially, Mallory, is that was something that was instilled with us, recognizing that we do need to reflect upon the fact that we are minorities and ensuring that what we do and how we present ourselves and how we represent ourselves is consistent with how we want, you know, to be treated and others to be treated.
Mm-hmm. Skipping ahead, you both went to high school here in Denver. What school did you go to?
TJ.
Thomas Jefferson High School, which
home of the Spartans,
might one day be DPS High School number 12 or whatever the name change will eventually be. George Washington High School is where my daughter goes, and his daughter graduated from GW. So
I'm almost... So you're close today. You hang out essentially every day, at least at the workplace. Were you friends in high school?
What do you mean
me
by
and Danny?
What do you mean hang out? I don't hang out.
Yeah, we're not.
I'm sorry. You work very hard with one another in the same building.
I walk by his office. I will give him a ride from time to time. Make no mistake.
Make no mistake. I'm 2 years older.
He's 2 years older.
And it was very, very uncool to hang out with anybody 2 years younger growing up.
Right, true. Right. Yeah. Yeah, you had that experience as well?
Oh, yeah. My brother is 2.5 years younger than me. So
yeah, you wouldn't want to be cut dead with him in high school. Right.
No.
I'm kind of getting over that, mostly because now Danny looks 2 years older than me, and now it's a little bit more comfortable.
Well, and I think, David, and on that point, it's probably smart to not antagonize your boss. So... being the man who signs your paycheck, I think that it probably is, you know, good to you know, maintain a good relationship with me.
So interesting. Yeah, I have auto deposit, so I haven't seen a signature on the bottom. And if, in fact, it's yours, we will be changing that when we get back to the office.
Well, there is a signature, and I am aware because I'm in charge of the bank account. So anyway, as you were saying,
we'll get back to Danny's law firm.
Mm-hmm, thank
but
you.
Before thank that, you. I want
Danny's
to ask
law firm no
about...
longer exists. Just so we're clear.
Okay.
I want to ask you about law school. You law had school. Very different law school experiences, I think. Tell us a little bit about law school.
Well, do you mean that I was one of the top graduates and the speaker?
That's what I was getting at.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Oh, is that where we're headed?
Well, we both graduated.
Did you go to the same law school?
We did.
Okay.
We did.
And you lived together during law school, didn't you?
Oh, my goodness.
We did. And
it was just my dad trying to save money because all of our Pell loans and those grants were all... You know, it was easier for us just to get a house and live there. But we really try to not talk or socialize or eat together, right? Except for in our study group, because we're in the same study group.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, we navigated that just fine.
Which law like school it. Did you go to?
We both went to DU.
Okay, awesome.
I went into the one school that took me. make no Fair mistake enough. About it. That was a school that took me, which I'm grateful to the University of Denver
Shout
for taking
out to
me.
DU.
Little DU. Mm-hmm.
Tell us about your law school experience, Danny.
Well, it was not... I would say for a lot of people who go to law school, it's really an enlightening experience. That was not my situation. I still have dreams and memories of law school. When I started, I literally did not know the difference between a plaintiff and a defendant. So I was really starting off cold. And it stayed cold for a couple of years.
You're right. There was, even through law school.
There was a warm-up process that was a little slow.
Yeah. If we had more time, I'll tell you about one day that I had in criminal law, which was not...
I was going to ask if it was Professor Espinosa.
It was that day in criminal law, which I was like, well, at least one thing I know, I'm not going to do criminal law. And then I was a prosecutor and defense attorney for many, many years after that. So what do you know? But DU was interesting because David decided to defer for a couple of years and get his master's while I was still in undergrad. And then I took a year off after I graduated until my dad said, you better do something with your life, you loser. And, so I decided to go to law school. And, so David and I were in the same section.
Oh.
Yeah, we were in the same section and we were in the same study groups. As a matter of fact, here's a little unknown piece of trivia, unless I've shared it at all the Cobalt talks. David and I do have somewhat of a resemblance. And so it's the graduation and the big
composite.
The big composite picture comes out, the one they spend thousands of dollars on, and everyone gets their picture. And we have like 300 kids graduating in our class. And there it is on the wall. My picture and David's name beneath it. And no picture of David and no name for me.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, we're going to probably have to point that out to someone. Because this is, people are like just starting to understand that we were actually different people. I thought there was two of them and I thought one of them was named Danny, but apparently there's just one who looks like Danny. So they ended up having to redo the entire composite.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh,
well, and
serves them right for
absolutely
for
not paying attention. It's a life lesson. Life lessons.
Yeah.
So, but it was great. I just wanted to graduate and get out of there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we, you know, I don't think there are too many professors who are writing down their the history of their teaching. And remembering both me and Danny as stellar students. Well, certainly not
Danny.
Did you
have the Foster Boys in your class? Oh, I remember the Foster Boys.
Oh, you're saying it like in like, oh, the Fosters. Oh, yes. Well, they were exceptional students.
Yeah. That won't be said at any of our confirmation hearings.
I don't. Probably won't be a confirmation hearing. I'm aware of. But
let's jump ahead to Danny after a few years as a district attorney, deciding that he should leave public service and start a law firm. Tell us what that looked like, Danny.
Well, I was a deputy under Bill Ritter for 2.5 years. And I decided that I wasn't going to do this for the rest of my life. For me, it just wasn't my thing. I have a little bit more of an entrepreneurial instinct. And, you know, being in a courtroom every day doing dockets and such was just not something I could handle. So I did leave. Fortunately for me, I didn't get the immediate promotion that I had hoped. So I guess it's fair to, you know, I might as well be honest here, right? I didn't get the promotion. Thank God. You know, God does work in mysterious ways, right? Had I gotten the promotion, I had a couple of people who were senior to me, but I thought that it was my turn. and the building. So I eventually left, which was good for me. And I started a little practice, and I hung up my shingle, and I leased space from the law firm that I clerked for when I was in law school. And I was like, open doors, whatever comes in. I mean, I took some cases that would make any first year's skin crawl. The fact that I took, certainly for seasoned attorneys to see the kind of mess I was taking, literally within the first few weeks, I took a case, I took a federal patent trade, patent trade infringement litigation suit, which I could do because you don't have to be a member of the bar, the patent bar, to take it because it was the litigation. It wasn't filing for patents. I was like, oh, yeah. $75 an hour, a $500 retainer, right? And they drop off this complaint, and you could weigh the complaint, and I was like, huh, well, maybe I should have stuck with something in my lane a little bit more. So you learn and you learn and you learn, and you start to take the cases that you're good at, and you start to shed away your practice. So I did this for, 9 months, and then Bob Graham and I, who we're friendly in law school, he went to a different law school, and he was looking for space. He was a solo. I was looking for some space because my lease was coming up, and we decided, let's just start. So we started Foster and Graham, and then eventually someone came begging for a job. And eventually we allowed David in, and then David beget other smart people. And here we are in 2020, and I've got Mallory here, who's probably smarter than 3/4 of all the lawyers in our law firm. So it's been an interesting ride.
What's your version of this story, David?
Well, I'm going to stick with the facts. Facts matter. Facts matter. If there's nothing else we've learned over the last 4 years.
You are entitled to your own opinion, David.
Yes, I've heard this. Anyhow, I graduated from law school. I went on to be a family lawyer for a couple of years, and then ended up at a land use practice.
Which probably is a natural segue from family law.
Right. So natural, isn't it? Yeah. It was about relationships. The partner at the firm that I ended up going to was a very close friend of our families. As it just so happened, his daughter, who I grew up with, became a rabbi. And so I think he was paying back my folks by making sure that I was a land use attorney like he was. So I went to work for him, and he was really a great mentor to me, and was with that practice for, 5-6 years. And then at that point, that practice was kind of going in about 3 or 4 different ways. The 3 or 4 different partners had all made decisions to do something else. And so Danny, I think we had purchased the building downtown at that point on Bannock before I moved down there. You were already down there, Danny. And so we had already made a joint investment in a building.
Were you a partner in that building before you were a partner in the firm?
Yeah, pretty sure. You don't think so?
Well, I think that means you owe me some money. we'll talk
Anyhow,
about that later.
So we ended up collaborating, and I brought my practice, which was a very different practice than Danny and Bob's. It was a lot more sophisticated, I would say. And so
I practiced preschool law. We had lots of building blocks and etch-a-sketches.
And from my joining Foster and Graham, or Foster, Graham, and Huttner at that point, both Dan Kalischer and Mike Milstein came over. These were friends who I had grown up with. Mike Milstein and I go back to junior high school, and Dan Kalischer and I were fraternity brothers up at Boulder, and they were both, very seasoned litigators. And so they came over, and hence Foster, Graham, Milstein, and Kalischer was formed. And that's where the story is, that Danny started Foster and Graham, which he did. And I started Foster Graham Milstein and Kalish, which I did.
So the foster is you then?
The foster is both of us.
Oh.
It can be you.
Just like the composite photo.
It's kind of blended in together.
It's just one. That's right.
Got it.
That's how the firm kind of is today, and still, you know.
One day it'll be Revel and Associates.
Mallory's shaking her
you're
head.
You're good at the law firm.
Management.
The law firm management, yeah. Well,
you never know.
I am actually interested to ask you about what you've learned about running a law firm, because it's not as intuitive as I think a lot of attorneys think it is.
And you just celebrated last year.
20 years.
Or this year, this summer, 20 years.
Technically, I started my own practice, Daniel S. Foster LLC, in 1999. Bob had started his probably in 98. We started Foster and Graham basically January 1st, 2000. So we were going to have our big 20-year party that we had planned this past June, and then we had to defer that, you know, inevitable to some point.
Indefinitely,
yes. So we'll see if that ever happens. But you were saying.
Oh, I'm just curious about any lessons you've learned that you might pass on to younger people putting out their shingle about running a law firm, because as we know, law school doesn't teach you how to run a law firm.
It's true. I mean, it is about running a business, and lawyers can't lose sight of the fact that you're in a business, and what you're first and foremost providing is a quality legal service. And so when people ask me, how do you build a great practice? You start by being a great lawyer. So, and it seems rather obvious, but before you worry about, you know, where you're going to be located and, you know, where, you know, are you going to advertise, or, you know, what's your logo going to look like? You have to be a good lawyer. And being a good lawyer means lots of different things, right? I mean, for some of my clients, being a good lawyer to them is just being responsive. You know, others actually want me to think, you know, so that combination of being responsive and thinking is those are two good attributes. But, you know, never losing sight of the fact that you're in a professional service business, never losing sight of the fact that you work for people, that people are relying on you. I think that is something that is often lost. It's not necessarily fun to have to, you know, be at somebody's beck and call. But that's what we do. I mean, you had asked Mallory about, you know, being in public service. We're not in public service. We're in private practice. But we are still professional service providers. And that means being available to our clients, you know, whenever they need. I know you're in the middle of the night sometimes, you know, on scenes, and doing your work. And so, I think that's in large part what it takes to be successful at this. And then, what Danny and I have been really, really lucky with is being able to surround ourselves with people whom we like. Because that's important, and don't underestimate how important it is to be around people who you like, because you're around them a lot. And people who we respect. And liking somebody and respecting somebody can be very, very different. And and, you know, and then from there, you know, you have great opportunities. People see that camaraderie that's built. People like it. Or they don't, right? I mean, not everybody who comes by and interviews probably even wants to work for us. But the people who do ultimately want to work, you know, for and with us, I think kind of buy into that camaraderie, buy into that kind of family spirit that I think we try and build.
On a more technical level, though, keep your money, okay? Count your money. Don't let somebody else be in charge of your money. So if you're running your own practice, you be on top of, I mean, if you're on a real specific, you know, you're saying it's not intuitive, there's some stuff that you should save your money, spend it wisely. Don't let other people be in charge of it, because that's how a lot of people end up going out of business. Be thoughtful about what you're spending money on. I mean, they joke with me that they will see me walking around the office, and if I see a binder clip on the ground, I will pick up that binder clip. Or if I see somebody just dumped a bunch of binder clips or file folders in the trash, I'm like, why are we throwing these away? Honestly, it's just that mentality of being super poor and how little things add up. So that would be my primary thing. And second thing, and it kind of goes along with what David's saying as far as building a practice, thank the people who refer you business. You don't understand how far that goes. And or if you've got a question about some, you do family law, but you've got a weird tax issue that, you know, always props up in domestic dissolutions, and you have to call one of your tax friends or, you know, accounting friends, take them out to lunch. Write them a nice note. No, and write it and do handwritten notes. I know, being very specific, people get so sick of it, but I've got a big stack of cards. When people do me a favor or refer me a client, I always give them a handwritten note. And it's little things like that that go a long way. And I've learned this from people who, when I was young and I would reach out and I'd ask questions, or I'd refer somebody a business and they'd send me back a nice card. I was like, huh, that was nice. You know, so it's little things like that. And it is absolutely a marathon. It's not a sprint. And I'm so tired of these fly-by-night firms that pop up and they just bash the airways with ads or stuff like that. And you'd never have heard of these people before. Mm. And they haven't done the hard work of establishing themselves in this community. And that goes along with being a good lawyer, being an ethical lawyer, surrounding yourself with smart people. And it takes time. It just takes time. Well, business takes time.
And kind of furthering Danny's point, and that is being a part of a community, you know, making investments in a community, and that can take on a lot of different, a lot of different ways in which to make investments in a community. You know, we encourage everybody in our office to be a part of something, right? Be on a board, take an interest in a charity. The law firm will, you know, support you in that endeavor. Sometimes it's putting your money where your mouth is. I get it, right? It's time, talent, and treasure. I mean, those are the three keys. And for many people wanting to get, you know, into community, it's hard to, you know, show up to your first board meeting and you're going to be asked to make a pledge. And, you know, I want people to have the confidence that, you know, the law firm is behind them and will support them. So that's important. And do things that are important to you. We have our own values, right? Our values don't need to be everybody's values. I like it when people are a part of organizations that, frankly, I'm not familiar with. It broadens our understanding of what community looks like. And Danny and I have spent, because my parents taught us this, right, the better part of our lives making investments and sitting on boards and raising money for things that are important and encouraging others to do things that are community-based. An old friend of mine who passed away not too long ago, and his name was Bob Loop, and you can drive by the JCC that he built many, many years ago, said, you know, there are not enough askers because there are plenty of givers. And so you need to be an asker, and you need to go out and give people an opportunity to do what in some cases they didn't even realize they had the opportunity to do. Just knock my microphone. But it is true.
Your microphone was probably trying to get away from you.
Bob Loop. Bob Loop is in here. He was speaking to all of us, which I wouldn't doubt.
So when I was interviewing with your firm, one of your partners took me to lunch, and that partner of yours told me that I should be someone who Danny Foster would want to hang out with. And I thought, one, how am I supposed to know who Danny Foster would want to hang out with? Mm-hmm. And two, why does that matter for a legal job? Like you were saying, you've made it a practice of hiring people that you genuinely like and genuinely respect. For the past 2 years in a row, Foster Graham has won a place on the Denver Post top workplaces in Denver.
The only law firm.
The only law firm.
Really?
Oh, wow.
I think so.
Huh.
I think so, too.
I think so. I looked at the
list. Oh, it's true.
Yeah.
It's true. We say it, it's true.
Yeah. So, I'm pretty sure.
How do you get to be one of the best places to work in Denver? Is that a conscious choice? Is that something that you work on? Positivity, workplace culture? How do you foster that?
Well, I'll
no
just,
pun intended, fosters.
Yeah.
All puns.
Well, this is not exactly the answer, but I will tell you, when Danny and I left the office just a short bit ago to come over here, we had an arrival that was sent to our office that we did not order from maybe Sam's Club or something. It was probably like 40 gallon jugs of fried pork rinds.
I don't know how that was a mistake.
I mean, seriously, this is not a joke, right? Fried pork rinds in these humongous plastic containers. So what do? As a top workplace, we don't just stick those back in the box and ship them back. No, we put them out, and you can have them for free if you get back to the office.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, you might want to get out of here.
You might want to call and
reserve that.
Offer pork rinds to your employees.
But they're not, I will tell you, I did take a handful, and they were not very well seasoned.
Danny did not acknowledge on this podcast that he ate fried pork.
I had a whole handful. Okay. They're delicious. Yes, I'm a very progressive Jew.
Okay.
What do we do that's different? I think it goes back to what David said. We actually have a very good core. When we started the firm, we started with people that we like. And when you work with people you like, and as important, people that you trust. Okay. So, there's a lot of people who have come in and out of our doors over the 20 years. And there's been some people who, you know, were partners and no longer partners, and that's fine. And for the most part, we've always had fairly amicable parting of ways. It hasn't always been perfect. You're dealing with, you know, high stress jobs and careers. But if you like the people that you're around, it does create a certain atmosphere. And it's not, believe me, it's not just David and myself. I mean, you know, Bob and Mike and Dan and all the really so many of the people in our firm are genuinely good people. So one of the things that I always do, and maybe this is, I don't know who took you out for lunch, but it probably sounds like a Kalisher-ism. No, it wasn't.
Kalisher did not know me.
Wow. Okay. Well, it's interesting. You start to develop, and this maybe goes to this law firm management question too, you start to develop a certain barometer, an internal barometer on people, right? And you only get that through having gone through a bunch of crappy situations that you get pretty intuitive as far as this is a good person or this is a bad person. And that's why I almost always, always demand that I have one of the interviews with everybody who comes in, just, you know, from bookkeeper to receptionist to paralegal, it doesn't matter, because I want to keep honing my skills, because I know people that we've hired in the past that were, I could just tell right off the bat that there was something that I didn't like. And you have to trust your gut on stuff like that. And I'm sure I've been wrong at times. I'm sure I've made hires I shouldn't have hired. I'm sure there's people that I didn't hire that I should have. But I think that what you want to do is create a good group of people, and you want to instill the concept of sharing clients, sharing matters, not being a pig with your money. So you want to save your money, but you don't want to be a pig and not share it with your people, and, you know, give good bonuses. I mean, that's, you know, money at the end of the day, people are all still trying to survive. So giving good and fair billing practices, not making people work 2,000 billable hours a year also pays off. So we've always been known as a firm that's, I don't like the term, but we're deemed to be a lifestyle firm. That seems to be like the new term of art that has started over the last few years. It's probably all you millennials have started this term. And
does it mean that you get to have a life while you're
working? You do get to have a life. As long as you're a grown-up and a professional and take care of what you're supposed to take care of, then do what you want to do. And I think the interesting thing of this whole COVID thing is kind of created this new paradigm for how we're going to exist moving forward. And quite frankly, having a lot of employees working from home, as long as you've got a good setup, I think that people who work at Foster Graham have been very professional. I don't have to check people's desks to make sure that they're there. I hate that concept. Where's Mallory? Where's Mallory? Where are you? You know, I mean, there's
Mallory's at brunch.
Yeah. Mallory's drinking craft.
She has the dogs
yeah, she's
on
drinking, she's drinking craft beer somewhere. So, you know, do your job, be a professional. And at some point in time, if you're not, we will discover that. And you'll discover it and you'll be unhappy. And so that's what we try and do.
And Danny's right about many of the things that he said. I think the COVID, practice of law has been very, very different. I think we've been very lucky in terms of, efficiencies, at home versus in the office. People have been, as Danny said, grown up. We don't have to, check in on their every moment. I think for some people, particularly our paraprofessionals, who, don't have to be in a car for, 2 hours a day and get that time right back for their family. Because we have a lot of people in our firm with young families and
sure. And
they are just as effective, just as efficient because they got time back in their lives. But there is going to be a cost, right? There's going to be a cost to relationship building internal to a law firm, which in some ways and in some respects is why people hire us, because of the way in which we work collaboratively. And I do believe that some of the collaborative working has been lost over the course of the past 6, 7, 8 months. The running into people in the hall is not happening, right? You have to get them on Teams. Now, by the same token, we've got it, the other side of the coin is that when you do connect with your colleague, you're sometimes a little bit more in the moment in those conversations. Mm-hmm. I have found myself listening to my colleagues a little bit more intently versus when they would just drop into my office for the 3-minute conversation. Because you schedule it in many respects. So now you are focused on it, but we're still missing out on that interpersonal relationship. The high fives, the celebratory moments when you have success, and even the moments where you don't have success and you need to, be compassionate with one another. Mm-hmm. And we've all, over the course of the past 6, 8 months, we've lost people, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we lost a partner of ours in March. Nobody was around to be able to console one another through that time. So I think that the impact of, our social distancing is going to be profound. And I don't know how law firms... We can still be good at providing legal services. I'm not worried about that. Mm-hmm. I'm worried about the relationships that we build as humans because, those opportunities are going to be fewer and fewer.
That makes sense. We're just about out of time.
Well, we're just getting going.
Yeah,
What is next for the Fosters? 20 years into the law firm. What's next?
Oh, I thought you were saying 20 more years. I was like, oh. Not me. I'm not doing this for another 20 years. What's next? Well, we've got a podcast with the Colorado Trial Lawyer Association and the Colorado Defense Lawyer Association today, David.
Oh, yeah, okay,
we've got more podcasts.
Oh, I didn't realize you were in such high demand.
And Axios is interviewing us later. So I think we're just going to continue to focus on we're going to focus on doing good work. We're going to focus on building up our practice areas. We're going to focus on making sure our attorneys and staff are in good place emotionally, physically, and spiritually.
Can you top that, David? That was a thorough answer.
Well, I will say this. I think that I will just say from a very personal perspective, the last 6 or 7 months has given me an opportunity to think about things that we've done right and things that we haven't been as successful at doing. Mm-hmm. 20 years ago, if you were to fast forward to 2020, we have a number of women in our firm who are partners. I'm proud of that. I think it could be more. And it's something that I think we will continue to work to achieve. I think the notion of more diversity in terms of minorities within our law firm is something that we will focus on. And it's something that we as a partnership is kind of making investments in literally as we speak. And I feel good about that. And I feel like you need to kind of recognize that while you have had success in achieving, building a great law firm, being great lawyers, that, along the way you may have not done some things as well as you otherwise could have. And so I think we'll continue to, adjust and make arrangements to do it better. The other part of the story that is truly more difficult for us to kind of acknowledge is there aren't as many minorities going to law school. Mm-hmm. And we need as a legal community to figure out, how to make that, more possible, how to make being a lawyer more relevant, so that this isn't the same conversation that people are having 20 years from now. I think we all need to kind of figure that out. Danny and I don't have those answers, You're going to help us, Mallory, to kind of figure that out. I have
the answers.
Danny has the answers.
But I'm not
Danny
sure.
will pass the answers. Don't worry.
I'll decide. I will share some of the answers with you off record.
I accept. All right. That is all we have time for today. Thank you both so much for your time. It was such a pleasure to chat with you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Here. Nice work. Nice work to the Colorado Bar Association, right?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Colorado Bar Association.
Yes, we appreciate that. Thank you.
That's awesome.
This has been Our Voices. For more information on today's guest or to get involved, please check out the CBA podcast page at cobar.org/podcast. That's cobar.org/podcast. This podcast series was created by members of the Colorado and Denver Bar Associations. Our Voices is a collaborative effort of the EDI Joint Steering Committee messaging team, including Mallory Revel, Linda Moss, Bonnie Schreiner, Mallory Hasbrook, Mo Watson, Mario Trimble, Courtney Holm, and Emmy Lopez, with our CBA Communications Team Director, Heather Folker, and Manager, Charles McGarvey. Our recording engineer is Rick Pontellione of Lionsbridge Recording. Our producer and editor is Courtney Holm, with theme and introduction by Mario Trimble. This podcast is made possible because of the support of the Colorado and Denver Bar Associations. On behalf of all of us, thanks for listening to Our Voices.